The Sports Hour podcast is live for this episode. What's going on, guys? Peyton Taylor, alongside Toby Leach, Grady Garner, and John Llewellyn. Guys, what's going on?
Not much. Short staff tonight. I made Chuck mad earlier about some Ole Miss baseball takes, so he's not here tonight. We miss him, and we wish he would come back. He's in our thoughts and prayers tonight.
Yeah. He's in our thoughts and prayers.
He is, man. He's just sulking. He's on the couch right now crying, playing MLB The Show. He's just bawling his eyes out right now, but it's good to be back. We got a week in a row. Think about that. We've actually got a week in a row recording. Feels good.
That's what they call consistent content.
Yeah. That's right. What we haven't had in a long time.
Yeah. Glad to be back for the second time in a row. It's been fun and I'm ready to get going.
Look at that. John was our special guest last week and we invited him back. He did so good last week and we decided to bring him back for 2 weeks in a row.
Lucky John.
Yeah. I can't be more happy.
I can hear the enthusiasm in his voice.
Let's start it off. John was just talking about how we need to talk about this because it's really what kind of blew up kind of all over social media either yesterday or yesterday, which was Saturday, which was LeBron playing in the Drew League for the first time in 11 years. Kind of blew social media up for a little bit. And John, like he said before, I mean, LeBron was – playing his heart out against guys who had just worked a whole shift at Best Buy. So it was good. It was a good time.
42-16-4 at going into his 20th year in the NBA. Doesn't matter how old you are or whatever. I mean, the Drew League, they're not scrubs. I mean, it's a good league, a good prime league.
Let's not get it twisted. He shot 2 for 13 from three. So the man was clearly getting garbage buckets on these guys.
Trust me, Skip Bayless made that abundantly clear. Did y'all see what he tweeted?
Right, I did.
Yeah.
He's love it that LeBron played in the Drew League today, but he shot only 2 for 13 from three and missed the late free throw that would have at least clinched overtime. Some things never change.
Did you see what the guy tweeted that was guarding LeBron?
He's not lying. He's got to get praised somewhere, and it's not going to be from behind three.
That's facts for sure. I did not see what the guy guarding him tweeted.
For every 2 points that LeBron got, the guy that guarded LeBron got 1 point. So he had like 20-something points. And he said that there was two NBA players on the other team with DeRozan and LeBron on that team, and they only beat their team by 2 points. So he was saying, like, they really weren't all that. Like, they could have beat them regardless.
With two NBA players
on the team. Yeah.
It just shows how washed LeBron James is. It just shows it.
Okay.
With 42-16. And DeRozan only had 10 with a dude that was – 140 pounds.
He decided he wanted to pull out his Michael Jordan. He wanted to play against, like you said, guys who were flipping burgers an hour before the game started. So it's just
right. The man had a full time life before that game.
Yes,
come back and guard LeBron.
He had to think about this. That guy had to leave that gym, go home to his wife, and sit there and just like cuddle up to her and listen to him cry because he gave up 42 to LeBron.
Let's not overlook one guy gets to go home and is probably still on cloud nine when he hits one spin move in the lane and loses LeBron to the bottom of the basket, hits a jumper mid range.
Yeah, and the other guy's LeBron and he has to go home and cry because he's not getting Kyrie.
The guy that was guarding LeBron was probably an assistant GM at Carmart and he's probably sad because he had to go home and, and not get to play professional basketball anymore.
I can believe it, but he's going to be at work Monday and he's going to sell some cars, okay?
That's right.
We're three 100%. Behind sales goal.
This man, Toby, really hit me up last week and said, hey, can you wanting to buy a car? I can get you in one today.
I was just looking out for my buddy, Peyton, you know.
This man really feeling it on his sales goals, y'all.
I'm willing to Columbus and see Toby.
We're willing and dealing, man. Not a sponsor.
Let me ask y'all seriously about what makes you think, like, why do you think LeBron, after 11 years, decided to play in the Drew League? Just out of the blue, nobody knew about it until the morning of. I mean, I know LeBron has a competitive attitude, but a competitive attitude I don't think is the only reason a 38-year-old player comes and plays in the Drew League on a random Saturday.
He got tired of in July, he was scrolling through Instagram and only saw Chet Holmgren highlights instead of his own. So he's like, bet, I'm going to the Drew League. So he can get
I think it takes a more in-depth approach. I think all of his workout videos that he's posted and that his training videos have posted have been nothing but him working on his outside shot. And when was the last time you saw LeBron taking regardless if he's playing against mailmen and guardsmen at night, when's the last time he's taken 13 threes, and why is he taking 13 threes on these guys anyways? But he took 13 threes in all these workout videos he's been posting nonstop, or basically his step-back jumpers and everything outside, I guess developing his game more into a shooter guard. But I think he came out trying to maybe show some of that and didn't really – do it. But then when if you didn't watch anything or you didn't hear anything, you would just see 40 points and say, wow, he must have showed out, when in reality, if he was trying to prove he's a shooter, he's still not.
Anything to prove. I don't think he was going out there to prove anything. I think he was just going out there to, nothing to do in July, why not go play some basketball in the Drew League? I think it was just a popularity stunt. That's just my opinion.
Let me ask you this. Let me say, do you think that the expectation that Kyrie was going to play played any part into it at all, seeing as, you know, it's no secret that the Lakers and Kyrie are connected at this point and trying to find Kyrie a new home?
Go ahead, John.
I mean, based on the Drew League, no. I mean, I definitely think that Kyrie spending most of his off time in L.A. is definitely – a huge sign about it, and I think it's kind of hint inevitable. I don't know what they're going to get or what they're going to give, but I think it's a very strong statement that Kyrie is going to end up in LA, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, I think LeBron kind of thought, you know, if Kyrie was going to play in it, you know, kind of work them kinks out, because really, if they're really keened in on getting Kyrie in the offseason, you got to start playing together again. So I think he kind of saw it as an opportunity that that maybe if they started playing again together, that they could mesh well later on into the season, or however long it takes to get them before practice as the season gets ready to start.
It was just really odd to me. Like I said, you know, a guy that's 38, I mean, I guess, you know, the Drew League is probably not much of a difference from the workouts that he's usually doing, you know, during the summer, during the off months. But it just, again, odd that after 11 years he decides to join on a random Saturday. Just, you know, odd, but I mean, I guess nothing against it. And it was great for the Drew League, let's say that, because nobody could stop talking about it. The NBA app even put the Drew League stream on their app for the first time ever. So that was, I mean, a huge win for the Drew League, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I was just saying, everybody talking about all the headlines I saw on Twitter and everything, talking about LeBron's workouts and everything, is just saying, look at this Curry effect that he's made. Like, it's crazy how Curry's been this impactful in people's games now. And what I was saying was more directed at, like, no, that probably wasn't the purpose of him going to the Drew League, but think of what the headlines would have been if instead of LeBron's 3 points going 2 for 13, think if it was 7 for 13, 8 for 13 in the Drew League. Well, what would the highlights have been then? Him dunking on 5-6 guys, or him hitting 6-7 threes in that Drew League game, saying people better out for him behind the yard now?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think you're exactly right, John. It's just, it, again, all in all, it was an odd situation, but it's a good situation. Got a lot of entertainment about it out of it. Like we said, we saw LeBron still not be able to shoot it consistently from three. So
yeah, he just don't have that clutch factor.
According to Skip Bayless,
man, Skip Bayless just more and more. I link with Skip more and more each day. He reminds me of me.
Man's an idiot.
Man is the worst sports personality on TV, and it's really not close.
Well, I think when it comes to sports knowledge, according to the poll last week, I won it. So I guess I'm better than Skip.
All right. Easy.
If your mom, your dad, and your brother vote, it doesn't count, sadly.
It does count.
What did the votes end up coming to be? I didn't even know there was a poll thing.
I couldn't tell you. I know I won it, but I don't remember how many votes.
Yeah, sure. Now, you're right, Toby. Mr. Sports Personality. Let me ask you about the Open this weekend. Did it surprise you that Roy McIlroy made it through the second cut? Did that surprise you at all?
You let me tell you something. I didn't watch a single round. I didn't watch anything of the Open. All I know is Tiger had two bad games, and I didn't watch it. So
two bad games? You mean two bad rounds?
Rounds. Shut up, Peyton. I didn't watch it. I'm sorry.
Hasn't Rory been on a heater the past two big tournaments he's been in?
Yeah, he really has. And that's what I mainly want to talk about. So it was Cameron Smith, the Brit, who ended up winning at 20 right. under. And Rory ended up shooting an 18. Somebody pointed this out, and it's wild. I don't remember the last time Rory during the tournament shot a bogey-free final or day four. He shot two rounds of a 66 and only hit into one bunker the entire weekend. And in that bunker shot, he holed out. Right. And for a guy to play like that and to not win is almost unheard of.
Another thing, too, is with him on Sunday, 18 regulation greens he could have hit in play, hit all 18 greens. I think the only thing that Rory did wrong on Sunday was in his final 15, 16, 17, 18 was he didn't make that clutch putt. I think he was too conservative in his play. Of course, he didn't bogey any of these holes. He didn't do anything that he didn't need to do, but he was way too conservative. He couldn't make any putts down the stretch. And Cam Smith, every time that Rory's right on his heels and he thought that, oh, he's going to choke this one and Rory's going to catch up to him, he will make the putt. I mean, there's a 15-footer, I think, on 17 where he made – he got up and down. He put it in onto the green and put it in. And, I mean, it was like nothing fazed him. Even when he won, I don't think his emotions were still too high or too low. He's just a guy where he's wiser beyond his years. And I was really, really surprised to see how well he played.
Right. You can play great golf every round and still come short because you got to play great golf and lucky golf to win. And I just feel like Cameron Smith had it just dialed in with both categories. I thought the most shocking thing to me was that I don't even think the top five were the most shocking to me. DeChambeau shooting 12 under was the most shocking thing to me. I haven't seen the guy shoot near as good in so long, and I just feel like that was the biggest shocker to me seeing the leaderboard.
Yeah, I think that and like I said, just Cameron Smith. I mean, shot an 8 under on day four to come back and win it, including 6 under on the back nine. So you know, you talked about Rory. I wouldn't necessarily say Rory choked it in any way. It's just that Cameron Smith was just on it, and Rory could not find a way to keep up. I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily choked it. I mean, Cameron Smith played. I mean, honestly, I think you have to put that up there with in terms of recent years and all-time golf round. I mean, you know, 8 under with a 6 under on the back nine on a championship Sunday is just unbelievable.
Especially playing the villain, too. I mean, everybody there – with it being in Scotland and Rory being from Northern Ireland, the entire, I guess you could say, continent of Europe was pulling for Rory in that situation. And, I mean, going into Sunday, leading through 3 days, I mean, he was looking to be a wire-to-wire winner. The only person that's ever done that, I think, in the last 20 years is Tiger Woods and the Open. And he goes Sunday going in the last group against Hovland, and they think, oh, these two guys are going to battle out to the finish. And Cam Smith comes in and shoots a 8 under, shoots a 6 under on the back. I mean, it's just something you really can't put into words as someone that watches golf.
Yeah, you got to shout out. I feel like you got to shout out Chuck. Chuck has been telling us that Cam Smith was one of the futures of golf, and he really showed it this weekend. Just an unbelievable weekend from a lot of guys. I mean, the Open is usually, and I know St. Andrews is kind of separate from the rest of the courses that are in the Open rotation, but even still, usually the Open, you expect to see a guy win it with a 7 under, an 8 under, a 6 under, usually low score winning scores. I mean, shooting a 20 under this weekend, there's just a lot of fantastic golf played this weekend.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to watch.
Toby, any comments?
I just want to kind of bring it up, you know, with Tiger playing bad.
Oh my gosh! Shut up about Tiger.
Is it time for Tiger to retire? Come on, can we start talking about it? Can we just bring it up?
Quit asking. He's not going to.
Look, okay.
Tiger Woods.
It's probably the last time he'd ever play at St. Andrews. Okay, the next time I'm pretty sure that St. Andrews is going to come in a rotation. He'll be 51 years old. Okay, so he's most likely never going to play there again. Do you think after this round or these two rounds, do you think it's time? Can we make that discussion for him to think about hanging it up?
Tiger Woods survived his leg nearly being amputated and he is the legend of golf, especially in our generation. Tiger Woods can play for 5 more years, miss every single cut, and he will still be known as the greatest golfer of our generation. He can play as long as he wants to.
Somebody asked him this Friday morning, I'm pretty sure, and they asked him, what do you think about retiring after this? And it was almost like an insult. He's like, retire? Why would I retire? I think mentally Tiger Woods will not retire until he physically cannot walk up and down the course anymore. And right now it seems like he can barely do it anyways. But I think until somebody tells him or until he cannot qualify to play anymore, he will be playing golf.
Tiger, this is – I mean, Tiger Woods is kind of like – he's kind of like Kobe with basketball. He's one of those athletes that when you look at him, you think he would be lost without golf. Like, I think Tiger Woods, if he had to retire, I think the dude would fall into a deep depression because I just don't know – I don't think he would know what to do with himself.
Like Toby said, though, of course I don't think he's going to be around when St. Andrews comes back around. I mean, I think that's just a given. But I think next year he's going to play the Open again, and 100% he's going to play the Masters again next year in April. So I don't think there's any question of that at this point in his career.
Can we just admire John Daly being there first round, second round?
John Daly didn't care. He was ready to go play golf with Eli Payton and Cooper. They were playing golf Saturday and Sunday.
Is he 56 now?
He won the Open, so I guess he automatically qualifies every year. Is that right? I'm not sure.
I know John Daly. When I think peak physical like athlete, it's just John Daly comes right to mind.
Tiger would run 10 miles and lift weights every day. John Daly would drink 14 Diet Cokes and smoke 4 packs of cigarettes. But it's still a physical special.
It'd be a shootout on the golf course.
That man have a 24-pack down by the turn going into the 10th.
What did John Daly end up shooting this weekend?
Last time I checked, he was even. And that was one before it got cut.
He shot a 3-over.
Wow, it's actually not bad. Not
awful.
It's better than Tiger this weekend.
Yeah. So can we confirm John Daly better than Tiger Woods?
I mean, honestly.
What happened to Tiger was like on number one, his first hole that he teed off, he hit it square down the middle of the fairway and he landed in a divot. I mean, it was just not meant to be, and he double bogeyed that first hole because he hit the ball in the water out of that divot. So, I mean, it never really went his way. And a lot of the people that I've heard talk about it this weekend is he was really – about the weekend to play, and sometimes just things don't go your way, especially when you get bad rolls like that. Like on the first tee, you hit it in a dang divot. But I don't know about Tiger, and I don't know about John Daly either. But
can we talk about how Brooks Koepka is in a massive, massive slump?
He got the bag, so you could really care less how
he did get. That's a good point. He did get the bag. But look at this man, his results this year. I'm going to read off. Since the 2021-2022 season started, tied for 67, tied for 38, missed cut, tied 9th, tied 28, missed cut, tied 3rd, missed cut, tied 16th, missed cut, tied 12th, missed cut, tied 55, missed cut. I mean, that's –
Yeah, he stinks.
Yeah, I mean, he just straight up stinks right now. This year in the majors of this year, he missed the cut at the Masters. Tied for 55th at the PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, he was 55th, and then he missed the cut this weekend at the Open.
I don't think he has that gumption to compete anymore. I mean, he's made the money. I don't think he really cares about how well he plays golf anymore.
Well, I mean, Brooks has made it abundantly clear before that he doesn't find golf fun. He finds it as a livelihood.
And that's what it looks like with his play right now.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's just crazy to see because Brooks was the best golfer in the world just a couple years ago. I mean, for a guy, or at least the hottest golfer in the world a few years ago. So for a guy to fall from grace like that is just ridiculous.
Well, the DeChambeau and the Koepka rivalry there for a little while was what kept golf alive. It felt like those two young guys that were going at each other every week, and DeChambeau was hitting it 400 yards every time. It was just fun to watch. But now those guys have sort of just fell second tier behind Cam Smith, Will Zalatoris, and all those guys. Rory McIlroy. It's a different breed now of golf.
So if you can hear that in the background, that is John's dog playing with a toy bottle of Bacardi.
Right. He just turned 21 like 2 months ago.
That's awesome.
That's got him awesome. A Patron bottle and a Bacardi bottle.
That's great. Yeah.
Let's move on from the – go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to – it sounds all cool, but I was the whole discussion right there is right when that dog had grabbed that toy, and I was sitting there watching in amazement.
You weren't going to add anything anyway, so
– No. Golf dies when Tiger retires, sadly.
Oh, shut up.
Until Charlie turns 20 or however old it is.
Born again when he retires, man. There's got to be somebody else come take a throne.
Yeah, Charlie Woods.
Shut up. All right, Toby, let's talk about something you care about. Let's talk about Juan Soto and him not getting traded to the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want him in the Cubs, so that doesn't really affect me. But it was really weird when it reported. I don't know if it was Bleacher Report that dropped the bombshell that he turned down $440 million, turned it down over 15 years. Really was a shock. But when I started kind of looking at the details that come out where he had he was only going to make around $29 million a year, which was below league average for his
only $29 million.
Well, when a guy like Mike Trout's making $32-33 a year, that's a big wage gap between it. So it was obvious that he would turn it down to try to get a shorter deal to make more money per year. But it was really just – it was kind of weird seeing that he would turn that down. Maybe if they would have offered him, you know, $400 million over 10 years, he probably would have accepted it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just – you know, I was talking with y'all about it, and – you know, John told us when we got to the MLB he wouldn't be much of the discussion, but I want to pull him in for a second because this is a hypothetical scenario. If you're – John, let's say you know, you're MLB player, whatever, any sport, and you get that kind of offer for 15 years, are you wanting to lock yourself in with a franchise that you obviously it's a huge bag, but you're locking yourself in with a franchise and possibly you may be locked in and that team isn't ready to compete for a decade?
Well, are you asking me as a player standpoint? Or
yeah, I'm asking you as the guy.
If a team is willing to put in that many years for me to be there, and a team is willing to give me that much money, I'm gonna come in every single day like my life's on the line, and that's where I want to be. If they're wanting me to be there that long, that's as long as I want to be there as well.
That's wholesome.
That's
right
just
there.
That should be a competitive spirit that every single player should be. It shouldn't be a business like it is, but that's just how I feel. If a team's invested in me that much, that's as much as I want to be invested in them.
I think this is a hypothetical situation that you could sort of relate it to, John. All right, let's say LaMelo Ball next year wins the NBA championship with the Charlotte Hornets, which is very, very way off in right field. But let's say that happens. 3 or 4 years from now, they're 11th or 12th place in the Eastern Conference. They're not looking like there's any upside in the future with them. And then Michael Jordan comes to him and says, all right, I've got you a contract, 15 years, $440 million. Would you still take that contract at that point?
Absolutely. Knowing that you would never – Absolutely. You don't even have to go any further. Absolutely. We've proved we can do it once. We can do it again. Like, we've seen the pieces we need around me. We know what we have to go get. It's not like the league changed overnight. We know who we're competing against every night, so we go out and do it. That's how it is. That's how I would see it.
I see what you're saying with that. But then again, the pieces that you brought in to win have already moved on. The pieces
pieces are going to move. Like that's just part of the game. Pieces are going to move. Pieces are going to get old. Pieces are going to get hurt. But the problem is, if you've won a championship, like you said, we've won a championship. We know the pieces it takes to win a championship. We know the minds it takes. We know the hearts it takes. You find that, that's your championship team. It's not going to – you can't find it. I mean, of course you can find pieces in other teams, but that doesn't mean they're going to match with your pieces.
Yeah, and it's just – when you look at it, and a contract like that, it's just – that would have been the largest contract in MLB history, right, Toby?
Yes, it would have been.
For a guy to turn that down, you have to figure that he is just extremely unhappy in that situation. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I don't think there's any way of sugarcoating that. That's a guy that does not want to re-sign with Washington, I don't think.
Well, I think what helps Juan Soto a lot is that Juan Soto, he's looking at this team and he wants to win a World Series. It's every kid who plays baseball, their dream is to win a World Series. When you get in that ability where you have the actual chance to do it, you're going to fight for it. Now, like I was saying earlier, if the Nationals would have come to him maybe a 10-year deal with an opt-out, then yes. They gave him a 15-year deal with no opt-out at all. Okay, so it was you did not get an opt-out all 15 years. So that kind of backs players into a corner where saying you either stay, you know, you're taking this deal now and you can't ever leave. So I think if the Nationals really, really wanted to keep him, they would have, of course, offered him a big contract like that, but they would have also gave him incentive to personally leave maybe 8, 9, 10 years down the road after you built a championship team that could have won a championship by then, instead of saying, you know what, this is all you're getting. We're not going to try to wiggle or anything like that. You're just going to be locked in for 15 years. You can't leave. You can't expand your game. You're just stuck here in Washington.
Yeah, so but if you're also if you're giving me a 15 years, if you're giving me 15 years, it's like you're bringing me into office. I better have some type of pull. I better have some type of say what's going right on up top.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's another thing, too, that I was going to say is I think he's feel like the front office is giving up because they got rid of all these guys that helped him win. Wasn't Max Scherzer on that team? Rendon was on that team. I mean, they had guys on that team that were competitive and that could get them to that point. And, of course, that year was a Cinderella story for them and they won the World Series. But all those guys that they had are not there anymore. There's nothing there for them to build on. And another player that's the same way that hasn't won a World Series is Mike Trout. And I think he's stuck there as well. He's a player that I could also see demand, but he's not that kind of guy that'll demand to leave somewhere. But Juan Soto will. And I feel like he'll get somewhere. It may not be at the deadline, but it may be in the summer. Or not the summer, but the winter that'll move from there.
Juan Soto reminds me exactly like Bryce Harper. You know, they threw him a bag, and then he got stuck there for five seasons, and he realized they wasn't doing anything else for him. So he asked to leave. Now he's at a Philadelphia team that, yes, they're kind of in that limbo, but at least they're trying to build something around him. They're trying to win him a World Series because unlike Juan Soto, when he was traded the year after, Bryce Harper didn't get a championship, and he's looking at that, and he's like, well, now I'm stuck here, but at least they're trying. If Juan Soto was to go somewhere, they would have to try to build around him. But that's the thing with the Nationals. If you're going to throw him $400 million, $440 million to be exact, you are locking yourself down where you're not going to really have enough money to build around him. So he's just going to be stuck in the Nationals for 15 years, maybe win one more World Series in that 15-year contract.
Are they going to move him before the deadline? August 2nd.
Well, that little Twitter thing that Chuck sent us in our group chat, I was reading it, and it was like predicting where Juan Soto would go. Juan Soto, he needs to go to a team that's either focused in on building a championship team, maybe not in a rebuild, but in the late stages of their rebuild, if that makes sense, where they're probably 1 to 2 years away, or go to a contending team. Like a couple of teams that come to mind, Mets, Yankees, Cardinals, Dodgers, somewhere like that that has enough flexibility that they can build a team around him or win him a couple championships in the next 4 seasons.
I think another one too. Did you say the Marlins? Huh? I think the Marlins is also a piece that they said they could go to as well because they've got a lot of minor league pieces they can move for him and pitch
yeah,
them,
I mean,
picks.
Yeah. Like what I was saying, we're a team that, you know, maybe is 1 to 2 years away. The Marlins is a team we kind of forget about where they're probably 1 to 2 seasons away from being a pretty good playoff team. And with a guy like Juan Soto who could come in, really change that whole organization, really could build something around him and possibly win a World Series within 4 or 5 years. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
So let me ask you this. If Soto gets moved at the deadline, which I personally, and not knowing a ton about MLB baseball, obviously, but I figure a guy like that, it'll be the end of this year before he's moved. Do you think if he was to get moved to the deadline, it'll be an all-time haul for the Nationals?
Yes and no. So baseball is weird where now I'm pretty sure with the new Players Association agreement and all that stuff, you can move draft picks now. Don't quote me on it, but I think you can. I think he'll probably get a haul between 3 to 6 prospects, and they'll have to pay out his contract, like with cash considerations, over a period of probably the rest of his deal, which is 4 or 5 years, which in baseball terms is a lot. When you're getting 4 or 5 really young prospects and you're getting cash considerations for a guy, they could even throw an MLB-ready dude if they had a couple guys on their team, whoever it is, could throw at him, and they probably would take that on top of prospects.
Yeah, it regardless, it'll be interesting to see, because I just don't see a guy. I mean, how old is Soto? I mean,
he's 23. He's going to be 24 at the end of the season, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this is a dude that has got 15 seasons at a high level. And so, I mean, you know, the Nationals try to give him that contract that would keep him there through his prime. So there's going to be either a competitor that wants him for 3 years while they're trying to win now, or a team like the Marlins or somebody who see him as a guy they can sign to long-term money and make him the cornerstone of their franchise.
I think wherever he goes, man, if you offer him an 8-year deal for $300 million, he'll take it no matter where he goes. But I think he just doesn't want to be locked in past his prime or through his prime, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
get him to his 31-year-old season. He'll have maybe, you know, 5-6 years left in the bigs. He can go wherever he wants to because he's already established you as a franchise, a good franchise, because he's probably won your World Series, or he's probably won an MVP, probably won a few gold gloves. He's definitely established you. So after that 8 years, he can go do whatever he wants to.
So, you know, we talk about moving draft picks and whatnot. Looking at the MLB draft, it's in process right now. You know, Jackson Holliday went number one. Drew Jones went number two. The big one I want to point out, because it's relevant to the area, is the 14th pick, the Mets selected shortstop Jet Williams. Now, we may not know that name, but that is a Mississippi State signee. So that is a prospect that getting picked at number 14, you have to assume, for all intents and purposes, the Bulldogs have lost one of their high prospects this weekend.
Wow, I didn't know that. You're just breaking news to me, so that is really interesting to see. I mean, last year, wasn't the third or fourth overall pick from Pennsylvania, wasn't he going to Ole Miss too, like a pitcher?
Jackson Job, yes, Jackson Job.
So, I mean, that's hard for them, but of course, that's just the duality of baseball. I mean, if you're good enough, you can go early in the draft, and then again, you feel like you've sort of slighted the people that try to pick you up with college, but I mean, that's just how baseball works.
Yeah, and baseball is weird like that with the draft. Is like you can get drafted all day long, but at the end of the day, you could still go play college ball. So it's not out of the woodworks that Mississippi State wouldn't keep him. It just, at 14, you're gonna get a contract that's gonna be bigger than any NIL deal you would get at Mississippi State. So yes. he probably would take it, because I think in the first round you're guaranteed a minimum. Is it a minimum of $500,000 in the first round?
That is a $4.24 million draft slot.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, unless Mississippi State's got some guy here in Starkville, Mississippi, that has $5 million, I would go to play Triple A baseball in the next 2 years.
Yeah,
Blaze Jordan was like in a second or third round, right? And he signed a $2 million deal. So, I mean, baseball is deep with that kind of money. It is.
But with the NIL deal, Toby, it's a good point to bring it up, because it may not matter for Jet, you know, that's getting picked at that high, but a guy that gets picked at like 29, 30, where they used to leave for a $2 million deal, now you get the right guy that really wants to play college baseball and he has a $500,000 NIL deal waiting on him. You know, that's a guy that you might could convince to stay. You know, that guy might decide, you know what, I want to play college baseball. I'm still going to make really good money. Let me go play for 3 years, enjoy myself, and get back in the draft and get drafted higher.
Yeah, that's when you know you got a good guy who's sitting there like, I can go play college baseball and also get my degree, because baseball doesn't last forever. 15 years from now, you're going to be retired, so you have to have some kind of fallback plan. So that's when you know that if you're sitting in a guy
baseball money lasts 29, forever. 30,
and that is true too, but so does a degree. So does the college experience. I mean,
well, and I would say baseball is the most unpredictable sport for prospects entering into the major leagues, though, because there's a chance a dude plays Triple-A ball for 15 years and never gets called up.
Oh yeah, 100%. And it's just like with Triple-A, especially with a lot of the good things they're doing now, is you go play Triple-A baseball for 10, 15 years and you can make really good money doing so. Now, if you're stuck in limbo playing high single A or, you know, double A baseball for your whole career, you won't make any good money. But if you get in that triple A organization where you can go play 10, 15 years, you'll make a really good living. I mean, you're still playing with some of the best baseball players in the whole world. I mean, any triple A ball team could go to Japan and beat them by 15 runs. So
I don't know.
Yeah.
Japan can play baseball.
All right. So let me ask the big MLB guys in here, which is Toby and Grady. Toby. Cubs picked Cade Horton, number 7, Oklahoma pitcher. We saw him in plenty in the College World Series. Was really good during it too. What do you think about the pick?
What I said in the group chat makes sense. As I wanted them to go to infield, You know, you got a guy like Nick Madrigal who's up there in the majors right now, and he cannot hit for power for anything. I wanted them to go to infield with that pick. But I think that pick just, you know, makes sense because you have a franchise that has basically no depth and in any prospect category when it comes to pitching, because you got four guys you called up into the majors. You've rushed their development. You had to go pitcher. I wanted them to go to infield, but you had to go pitcher. So I guess at the end of the day, they made the pick that made the most sense.
Grady, 22nd overall, Cardinals select Oregon State pitcher Cooper Hirschby. I believe that's how you say it. Either way, Oregon State's top guy, I believe. He very good. I remember watching the dude in their Super Regional against Auburn. I don't know how much you know about him, but talking about, you know the Cardinals at least. I know there's been rumors about Syndergaard from the Angels getting traded to the Cardinals to help that staff. So what do you think about stashing another pitcher in the minor league system?
I would have rather had Dylan DeLucia, in all, all honesty. I'm not going to lie about it. But, of course, the Cardinals need pitching right now. Adam Wainwright's over 40 years old, and he's still our ace pitcher. Zach Flaherty can't stay healthy. He hasn't been healthy for 2 years. He can't stay on the field. He's on the IL again, at least 60 days. Who else? Matt's is just now coming off the IL. I mean, we can't keep pitchers healthy. I mean, we go and we get these cheap free agents. And last year, I can't even remember the guy's name, but we got him from the Orioles in free agency just to throw a few innings. We had Kwon Kyu Kim, I think, last year from Korea. He threw a few innings, but we can't keep starting pitching. And, of course, last year we drafted a pitcher as well. So, I mean, it's a hole that we continue to fill, and I hope finally one sticks with this guy from Oregon State.
Yeah, like I said, that's a pick that I know there's been a lot of rumors that the Cardinals are looking for some pitching for the late run. So that seems like it would be a good pick. Obviously, when you're picking in the MLB draft, more than any other draft, you're not expecting a guy to come in and help right away. But, the Cardinals, with trading for Arenado last year, trying to set themselves up for the future while competing now. So I think either way, that's a good pick for them in terms of the future. So let's go ahead.
I was just going to talk about, you brought up Arenado. Arenado has called out the front office for the Cardinals. He said that he didn't come to St. Louis to win wild cards. He said that last week, and he sat out the last few games of this past week because he's getting ready for the stretch run. He's not playing in the All-Star game. He's sitting out because of his back. But as a Cardinals fan, that worries me, him saying, and not in a bad way, but in a good way, because he's making our front office make a decision. He's making them say, we're going to win now, because he didn't come here to win wild cards. He came here to win divisions. He came here to win pennants. He came here to win World Series. And he's upset at the front office, and I'm hoping that his message gets through and we finally make that push in the second half of the season. But
yeah, go ahead, Peyton. Just real quick, just coming right off of it, I think a lot of players, especially when you're a high-caliber player like Arenado is you have that voice that when you make a statement, every single person listens. If you say something, it has to be done because you have such pull in the organization. You get traded there where you didn't want to go anywhere else except St. Louis, Missouri. That is where you wanted to go play baseball.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You go there, you know, they make the wild card game, they get put out. Okay. You're coming back in, you're making a push where you're either division or wild card. There's no in between. Okay. You either win, you got to win probably, I'm going to say 88 plus games to get that wild card spot, especially how deep the NL is this year. With him making that statement, which I hate to say it, but it's true. The Cardinals are going to have to do something before the deadline. And I think they will, just because he's forcing their hand and they're going to have to call his bluff.
Right. I agree 100%.
Yeah.
Y'all, I think it was a little bit of a shorter episode, but I think we've covered about everything. There is one more fun thing I wanted to cover before we end off this episode. But I want to ask you, anything else that's piqued y'all's interest this week that you really want to talk about that I might be missing something off the top of my head? We've talked Drew League. We've talked Open. We've talked MLB. Soto in the draft. I mean, all-star selections, but,
Yeah, with football on the horizon, are we gonna talk high school football? Like, are you guys pretty interested in that, or you want to just
we definitely we definitely want to talk some high school football as we get closer to time.
Yeah,
but I definitely will need to do some studying up so I don't sound like a complete idiot. But, you know,
anything high school, but MLB.
Anything but MLB. But, you know, high school football is always fun to talk about. It's always fun to keep up with. I love high school football, so I'm excited about that. But that actually does kind of lead me to my final topic. Like I said, football is on the horizon. This week we have SEC Media Days. If y'all knew that or didn't know that, but regardless, finally we'll official poll for the SEC conference predictions from media members. So let me ask you this. I'll ask you two things. We'll start with one. First off, tell me a team in the SEC that you think coming out this weekend and meet in the official media poll is going to be ranked higher or lower than they should be.
Are you? I'm sorry. You said this is football, right?
Yes. This is football.
Okay.
So the SEC this upcoming year, you know, they release a conference prediction each year.
All right. You ready? I got it.
Okay.
First thing that come to my mind because everybody's high on this team, and I think they're gonna be good. But they're going to be lower than what they come out.
Same team.
Arkansas.
I hope we're thinking of this.
Arkansas. Arkansas finishes lower than what they're predicted. They have a good season, but they're not going to finish where I think they're going to predict them finishing second in the West. I don't think they do that.
Go ahead, John.
Grady. Yeah,
I was going to let you go. Okay, who I was going to say is, of course, Texas A&M. I mean, they've got them winning 10 games in the SEC next year. I mean, they had the greatest – recruiting class probably ever in the recruiting 247 sports era. So, I mean, of course, people are going to hype them up, put them in that stage with Alabama. But until Jimbo proves me wrong in the SEC that he can do it and that he can win 10 games, 11 games in the SEC, then I'm not going to believe it. Go ahead, John.
John?
The team I saw that was pretty high that I still don't see the hype around, unless I'm overlooking a massively easy schedule, is Kentucky. I don't see that, regardless of how weak the East is going to be, I still don't think that they're going to be one of those top two, three teams that are in the East. That's everybody's pointing them to be. I still don't see Kentucky being that team.
I really agree with that.
Just a little rebuttal on that is I'm pretty sure Kentucky on offense are returning like 7 of their 11 starters on offense. And I think it's like 6 of their 11 on defense. So they're going to have experience on that team with a weak East division. Like we're talking a division. Best team is Georgia. And then we have no idea who the second best team is.
But here's the thing with Kentucky. And I actually agree with John. I was going back and forth between this team and another team. So I'll use the other team, but want to talk about Kentucky for a second. They are returning a lot, but I think that Will Levis is the most overhyped quarterback in the conference.
Who's that?
Will Levis, the quarterback of Kentucky. I think he is the most overhyped quarterback in the conference. He's not bad.
I mean, it was blowing my mind how high people are on him going into the year. I mean,
people are talking about Will Levis being a top three quarterback in the SEC this year, and I just don't see that happening. I don't see that guy. I mean, I watched Will Levis plenty of times last year. And I just don't see where that comes from.
And I'm just going to go ahead and throw the poison in. I'm going to say we win 9-10 games.
Let's go. Come on.
With who's as starting quarterback? Jackson Dart. And I'm going to tell you, the quarterback who starts the year
is going to finish the year.
Who's going to finish the year. We have – a very easy first six games. Whoa. So the quarterback that starts the first six games is going to be 6-0. He's going to look like the mayor of Oxford. And we're going to go into a tough ending schedule. But like I said, biggest thing in sports is confidence. And when you have that much confidence coming off a year like last year, it's just going to feed into the year. And I see us winning 9-10 games and with the same quarterback. And I see that quarterback being Jackson Dart.
Speaking 9-10 games real quick, when you look at football, there's only two games that even – Alabama, but I don't want to talk about Alabama. I'm not even – because it's at home, okay? The two games that actually make me nervous is Arkansas and Fayetteville and Texas A&M and College Station. Because, you know, both of those games are going to be at 7 o'clock at night. We're going to have to go there. It's going to be cold in both games because we're going to play them in late in the season. I want to see coming off the first 7-8 games, if Ole Miss is sitting there 8-0, Could those games be trap games because Ole Miss is going to be riding high going to that, which is just hypothetical. But how can Ole Miss overcome coming – hopefully starting off 7-6, 7-0, how can they overcome those late games where you get Texas A&M in College Station, you get Arkansas, and I think Arkansas is going to be overrated. Right. But it's really hard to win in Arkansas, especially in Fayetteville, at 7 o'clock at night.
And this is a good subject because I was just talking to my buddy that's the manager at for the football team, and he was just talking about how his biggest surprise for everybody that's not really sold on the team and was a pretty weak point for us last year was our receiving core, and he thinks that is going to be a huge strong suit for us this year, coming off with like the transfer we got. Just the healthy receivers coming back. And he said, I mean, they're looking phenomenal.
Yeah.
But he also said, TCU running back, what's his name?
Zach Evans.
He said, we have a great backfield, but Zach Evans is on a different level.
Yeah.
Evans is incredibly talented.
Speaking of Zach Evans, who we did a podcast, I can't remember which episode it was. I know it was earlier in the quarter when we got him. We talked about the biggest things that's going to affect Ole Miss football. And the number one person I said, even after we got Jackson Dart, who I'm really high on, you can ask the group chat. I've been high on Jackson Dart since we got him and in February of this year. Zach Evans is going to be the best running back in the SEC this year.
Yeah, that's high, but he is talented. He's got the talent to do that.
Look, Grady, I hate to burst a bubble right here with the whole, oh, we love Altmyer. You don't get a quarterback like Dart in the transfer portal. And if you're Lane Kiffin, you do not land Jackson Dart without telling him he's going to be the quarterback of the team this year. Look, you don't do it.
You weren't on the group chat before. When did we talk about it? It was probably the first or second podcast. Chuck was arguing with me about how Luke Altmyer should get a shot at starting quarterback. And that was my argument too. But my thing is the exact same argument that you're telling me right now. If you're bringing Jackson Dart in to the University of Mississippi, there's no way that you start that first game and he's not the starting quarterback. I told them there's no way that Lane Kiffin, with his Showtime Ole Miss offense, there's no way that he brings in Michael Trigg, he brings in Zach Evans, and he throws Luke Altmyer back there. I told Chuck before this, and if he was on here, he would probably disagree with me right now, but there's no way that you bring him that Luke Altmyer gets any touches at starting quarterback, no matter how well he does in the camp, how well he does in the fall.
But,
and I told him that. Tubby, you can back me up. Peyton, you can back me up.
There's and the
no
thing
way
is,
he
that's
a chance. There's
that's
no
not horrible. And that's not horrible for Luke Altmyer. That's not. Because you even if you know you're the guy, you want Dart to go out there and mess up so that you look like the savior. But the thing that's not helping him is we play scrubs the first six games, so he's not going to look like that for a long time.
And then he gets Kentucky at home. So, I mean, it doesn't really – I mean, he's got seven games probably to show that he can do it. And, I mean, this seven games against Central Arkansas and Troy.
Yeah.
I mean, what I think is Luke Altmyer will be at Scuba Tech by – I'm trying
Scuba
to think
Tech.
By November. So, yeah. I mean, he'll be in Mississippi by then.
I said it on the podcast again. I need to go back and listen to him to see. Is that Jackson Dart, I was always on him when he come in. I was excited for him to come in. But I think it started an era that, you know, Lane, he wanted his guy. But it also gave Luke Altmyer the motivation to take that job. Because if Dart come in and he was the number one guy, Luke Altmyer coming off a Sugar Bowl game where, you know, we throw that out the window, it's in the past. Where now he's got to step up, which I know that's probably going to be the number one question they ask Lane Kiffin this week is who is your starting quarterback? And I think Lane Kiffin's going to ask. I think he's going
to
answer it.
This is my point to this. I think Luke Altmyer is a safer quarterback. Is that bad to say?
I don't think he's a safer quarterback.
I don't think he is. 15 with two interceptions in the spring.
The thing
game.
Is, we're not. I know the spring game. I mean, come on, man.
I know, but
you
like
Altmyer
doesn't make mistakes. I don't
playing
like,
against those guys.
He wants to roll out to his left and throw back to his right. I mean, in the SEC, I mean, you may not be able to get by with that as you do in the Pac-12.
All right,
but I don't
Are
know.
You saying,
I don't know.
I guess let me ask you this. Are you saying he's a safer option to win you the games you're supposed to win, or is he the safer option to be the best team possible at the end of the year?
I think he'll be the best guy to get it to the players that he needs to get it to. I think he can get it to Zach Evans. I think he can get it to Michael Trigg. I don't think he can win those. I know you're saying, can he get us?
Yeah.
Can he if we've got the ball?
I'm saying if you got $100 in your hand right now.
If we're down 17-13 in Tuscaloosa, and we're 8-0, we're on college game day and the 7:30 kickoff. Who will lead us down the field and get that touchdown? I personally don't think Luke Altmyer could do it. Get us to 8 wins, but I think if you put Jackson Dart back there, 2-minute drill, 17-13, gotta score a touchdown in Tuscaloosa, I'm taking Jackson Dart. But if you're taking me out there to take us 8-0, I'm taking Luke Altmyer.
Right. That's what I was trying to say. If you got $100 in your hand and somebody's holding a gun to you and says, look, pick a quarterback right now, and you this is your quarterback that has to win you the championship at the end of the year, Jackson and you got Altmyer, Dart, there's not a person that's gonna pick Altmyer.
And that's why Lane Kiffin went and got him. I mean, if he had Luke Altmyer in his pocket, it's like, all right, I'll take him. He saw in Sugar Bowl what he needed to see.
So I'm gonna call it here. We're gonna have plenty of time to discuss the quarterback competition in the weeks to come. But final thing I want to ask y'all before we end off, we're talking about media days. This one's more of a fun one. If you could ask any coach this weekend, and let's say this because we're Ole Miss fans, can't be Lane Kiffin. You can ask any coach this weekend or this week one question at media days, what would it be? It can be stupid. It can be an actual football question.
Hold on while I get my answer.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. But you've got any of the 13 coaches besides Lane Kiffin. I would ask
Nick Saban what he thought about NIL deals and just walk away from the microphone for about 20 solid minutes.
That's a good point.
I would bank on a Nick Saban question and just ask how much of him looking forward to that A&M game is going to be.
Oh, just be like, so Nick Saban, Coach Saban, how much do you think Jimbo Fisher gave these players? Oh, and just walk away.
I would ask Jimbo Fisher about that video that surfaced about him talking about the press box, or not the press box, but the people that were setting up in the luxury boxes. Telling the recruits, those guys out there, I pay you a lot of money to go to school here.
Yeah.
Give me context to why you said that. That's what I would ask.
I would personally ask Brian Kelly why he spent his offseason romping up on recruits. That's just me, but.
What about the
Stetson seems to think that LSU is going to be very good this year. I don't see it. I think they are the Ole Miss of the past. That's what I told him this week. Y'all are what Ole Miss used to be. We're the big brother school now for now. So
LSU's going to be the same in football as they are in basketball.
I don't know. Auburn.
They're in the water.
I'd also like to ask the Auburn's coach about how he landed that intern, how he got with her.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. All right. Let's end it off here
She's a student intern.
Oh, yeah, man.
let's end it off here before we go, like, Raw and go TV 14. So, guys, this was fun. I was glad to be back. But we'll be back next week. I'm sure we'll have – the sports world, the funny thing about it is there's not many sports going on in July, but the news constantly comes rolling in. Next week we'll have – conference predictions to talk about and stuff along those lines from the official SEC media days and more baseball talk, I'm sure, with the All-Star break. But anything else before we end it off?
No, sir.
I'm ready for football season, ready for the fall.
I'm waiting
ready for the Grove. Yep.
Yeah.
No doubt about it, you guys. But anyway, for John, for Grady, and for Toby, I'm Peyton saying so long. Thanks for listening with us again, and we'll see you again next week.